Are the German elections this weekend really a foregone conclusion? The polls would suggest so. Chancellor Angela Merkel's Christian Democrats are well out in front of the main rival, the Social Democrats. So is it a question not so much of if she gets a fourth term, but the type of government that she's going to put together? Because even the Christian Democrats will need coalition partners. That's very much the German way. But there are also big issues, especially immigration. You might recall Merkel's decision in 2015, hard to forget, when she welcomed almost a million Syrian refugees to Germany with the cry, "We can do this." Her support did tumble, but it's since revived, although a new party is on the scene, the right-wing anti-immigration Alternative for Deutschland. Joining us is Michael Broning, who's head of international policy at the Social Democratic Friedrich Ebert Institute, and he's an expert on immigration, and Parnell McGuinness, an Australian writer and political strategist of part German background, and Parnell writes from a classical liberal perspective. Parnell, Michael, welcome to the show.
Well, great to be here.
Michael, just briefly, how did Angela Merkel turn around her unpopularity after taking in those 1 million refugees?
Well, I mean, I think first of all, it's important to understand what is happening in Germany is that we're not witnessing the end of democracy right now. You know, you mentioned the rise of the AfD, and it's certainly a problem, but this is not the Weimar Republic. So that being said, I do think that there's reason for concern, and it's definitely too early to give the all clear on populism in Germany. You mentioned the immigration issue and the summer of 2015, where Germany, you know, opened the borders to approximately 1 million refugees. And that is certainly one reason of contention in Germany right now. But there's also a more invisible current of dissatisfaction in Germany. And I think and I fear that this undercurrent is quite similar to the anger that has fueled the rise of anti-establishment parties elsewhere. So just to give you an idea about what I'm talking about, is, I mean, when you look at current opinion polls, 80% of Germans currently trust political parties little or not at all. And 70% of Germans have no faith in the reporting of the mainstream media. And you know, they did an international opinion call, a poll last year, where they asked Germans which professions they trusted the most. And German politicians came in dead last, well behind insurance agents and advertisement specialists. So there is general skepticism, and then there's discontent in Germany. But there's also this gap between the views of many ordinary Germans, many ordinary voters, and then the government position, which you could perhaps call the Berlin consensus. So just to give an idea, you know, when you look at the views that are shared by virtually the entire political establishment, there's a big difference to what many voters feel. So, for example, a majority of Germans actually prefers to close the borders to refugees, yeah, according to opinion polls. 70% of Germans believe that Islam does not belong to Germany. And only about 31% of Germans actually are against kicking Greece out of the Eurozone. And, you know, talking about Trump and protectionism, well, two-thirds of Germans think that that's a good idea if it means protecting German jobs. So, you know, when you look at these opinion polls and the difference between these views and the official position of government in Berlin, I think it's definitely too early to say that Germany is somehow immune to populism.
Parnell, you're very interested in campaigning, and you've observed campaigns in Australia and Europe and the US, I think. Have you seen a marked difference in the way that Angela Merkel and the CDU have been campaigning, especially given they've got this Alternative for Deutschland nipping at their heels, at their right-wing flank?
Well, all of the German parties have taken a stance against the Alternative for Deutschland by saying that they're simply not going to be involved with that kind of campaigning. So what the CDU has done, but actually all of the other parties as well, is simply not engage with the AfD in any meaningful way, or with the concerns that that it's raising. So the CDU's campaign at the moment is actually, I mean, you know, it's a template of an excellent campaign for a country which is doing quite well economically, and in which people are actually experiencing more jobs, better economic conditions, and so on. But And so they're really harnessing those issues and looking at a very optimistic sort of metro-based campaign. What the problem is, however, in the rural parts of Germany, these conditions don't exist. So there are pockets, especially in the old East Germany, where there is high unemployment, where people really don't feel like they are experiencing these benefits of a good economy. And this is where people are turning towards alternatives like the AfD. Interestingly, though, the AfD doesn't represent a closed economy in the way that Trump does, for instance. Their policies are really very classical liberal in a lot of ways, except for a couple of points around conservative issues and immigration and border control.
Yes, they in fact, correct me if I'm wrong, either of you, but didn't the Alternative for Deutschland actually start out as a group of rather mild-mannered sort of tweedy professors who were a bit worried about too much European immigration, but the party was at the grassroots taken over by a very large anti-immigrant sentiment. It may not be neo-Nazi, but it was taken over by an anti-immigrant feeling.
Well, I actually disagree that it has been taken over by that sentiment. The AfD is a bit chaotic as a party. It has some candidates which represent that kind of attitude. They tend to be in the old East, and they tend to have let them have a bit of license because they realise that in order to get any kind of backing, they need voters in those areas. But the core of the party is deeply classically liberal. And in fact, you only have to look at the founder, Alexander Gauland, who comes from the CDU originally, from the conservative wing, and whose philosophies are very much influenced by Edmund Burke, and the other co-head, Alice Weidel, who is a classical liberal, former Goldman Sachs banker who lives in Switzerland with her wife and two sons. I think a lot of people really don't look at what the foundations of the AfD are. And so the political parties have been writing off this idea that you need to be worried about some of these more unpleasant things that are being said by the chaos elements of the party in the old East Germany, and not thinking about, well, if these people came into power, what are the policies that they really would be representing?
Michael, you have an observation on that too, though.
Well, to me, the rise of AfD, at least the rise of AfD in the opinion polls in the last couple of months and since 2015, is clearly the result of the migration crisis. You're absolutely right to say that they were founded as this anti-Euro party, but they've shifted shape since then. I mean, they shifted shape from this anti-Euro to this anti-migration and now to this anti-Islam party. And you can really track that development very clearly in the opinion polls. In 2015, before the refugee crisis really took off, AfD stood at 3%, and then happened the summer of welcome, and AfD went to double-digit support. So they clearly benefited, and they were not shy about it. I mean, Alexander Gauland, the party leader, actually explained back in 2015 that the refugee crisis was a gift from God. So I think that there's a very clear a correlation there between the crisis and the rise of AfD. But I think what we have to analyze as well is, why isn't AfD any stronger? Because when you look at the Netherlands, you look at the Front National in France, or you look at the Brexit vote, or in fact at the Trump victory in the US, 10, 12, 13% for a right-wing populist party by comparison isn't all that much. And I think there's three reasons for this. First, I think there's Germany's historical legacy of right-wing and left-wing extremism. And this is still a historical experience that has still sort of inoculated most voters against actually voting for extremist parties, at least until now. And the second reason is the economy. I mean, Germany's economy unemployment rate right now is at, I think, 5.6%. That's a record low. Germany's GDP has grown since 2013 by approximately 10%. So Germany isn't Greece, and Germany isn't the US Rust Belt. And that also explains why it's more difficult for AfD to sort of lobby against the status quo. And the third reason is that I think that AfD has really made itself unelectable for mainstream voters by moving to the extreme right. I mean, most recently, they have praised the Deutsche Wehrmacht, the German army, for what they did in the Second World War. Earlier this year, a party leader called for a 180 degrees change of course on how Germany should remember the Holocaust, which is really it goes to the core of post-war German identity. Two or three weeks ago, AfD leader called for dumping in Anatolia in Turkey, the German Minister of Integration, and they have humiliated their own party leadership time and again. I mean, the party has been around since 2013, and they've had three different leaderships, one more radical than the other. So I think that it's a process of self-radicalization that is good for 10, maybe 15% of the vote, but not much more than that. I mean, it's bad enough as it is, but we're not talking 30% here, thankfully.
Can I ask you both, but starting with Michael, because you represent or you come from a Social Democratic Institute, how does it feel for the Social Democrats to effectively had most of their policies stolen by Angela Merkel? Because she doesn't govern, and I'd be interested to hear Parnell's view on this, she doesn't actually govern from a classical liberal centre-right position. I mean, she basically governs from the social democratic consensus, doesn't she, Michael?
Well, we always like to say that Angela Merkel is the best social democratic chancellor we never had, because you're absolutely right that she has moved her party very much to the left. And we are unhappy about it because we feel it sort of blurs the line between social democrats and Christian democrats, but also certainly many Christian Democrats are unhappy about it. And I mean, the rise of AfD is in a way a response to this shifting towards the left. I mean, the refugee stance isn't the only example of Angela Merkel moving to the left. She also, you know, stopped nuclear energy, introduced double citizenship, stopped the military drafts. There's a whole list of policies that she has embraced. And I would argue that they were ultimately good for the country, but they were basically incompatible with Christian democratic and conservative values.
Parnell, has Angela Merkel's co-option of a sort of a regulated state, a welfare state, cooperation with the unions, has that opened up a sufficiently large space on her sort of centre-right for a classical liberal party? Because there is a classical liberal party there, but the federal party, but they don't seem to be prominent.
They're not a very effective party. They had a bit of an implosion when they were in power a few years back. Look, most Germans, my sense is, are actually pretty happy with the governing from the welfare state, from that sort of combination of economically liberal but socially but social safety net style state. I mean, much like we have in Australia. And I think that I totally understand why Michael would be a bit upset about this. They really have merged into one set of philosophies in Germany. Where you do see a little bit of space opening up is really on issues that the two major parties don't want to talk about. And they tend to be on the immigration front and on the integration front, where things haven't worked terribly well over the past 40 years or so in Germany. But because of history, people don't want to talk about that. There is a lot of sensitivity around saying that, for instance, some Turkish migrant workers who have stayed here since they were brought in to rebuild Germany haven't necessarily been integrated as well as we would like. And in fact, there's a whole challenge around whether people even should be integrated. What does multiculturalism mean? And that's really where the space is opening up because, as Michael says, the economy is running very well here. People don't worry about whether things are classically liberal or not when they're doing well financially.
Yeah.
It's the issues where they're concerned that the society is starting to come apart on that the space is opening up in.
Parnell, you've also been looking at the Russian influence in this election, because you've got the party of the hard left, Die Linke, which has long been present in the Bundestag. It is quite friendly towards Putin and that influence, but also there is some suggestion that Alexander Gauland, the Alternative for Deutschland leader, is similarly open to Putin. So what is the influence of Russia in this election?
That's always a big question, isn't it? Look, there is no visible line that can be traced that Putin is involved in something, that Russia is involved in something. But you've always got to assume, especially in Germany, that they are. We all know the sort of the posturing and the power games that he and Merkel have had between them. Gauland and the AfD have, yes, said that they feel that we should be more open to Russia. However,
there have been no specific sort of policy moves that I could track, and certainly no financial input that is visible at this stage. Not like we're hearing about the US election, so where you can really see that that trail emerging. But of course, you know, it's a year in and it's only emerging now, that we're only starting to see that now. So the same thing might happen in Germany. It's just a bit of an unknown.
Michael, let's throw this forward and let's speculate on what Angela Merkel's government is going to look like. The Social Democrats have been the junior partner in the coalition, so they've been overshadowed by Merkel, and she's pinched some of their policies, the popular ones at least. Should they be again in coalition with Merkel, because she will fall short of a majority, or should they go into opposition?
Well, that's the million-dollar question, isn't it? I mean, the elections are on Sunday, but I feel that the real discussion and the real decision will be taken afterwards. And, you know, who is going to enter into a coalition with who is really the favorite topic of conversation amongst pundits in Berlin these days. I mean, we don't know the end result, so I think we'll have to wait and see until Sunday, but it looks like there's only going to be two options. There's either a grand coalition, so a continuation of what we've seen so far, like Merkel plus the Social Democrats, or a so-called Jamaica coalition. And, you know, this has nothing to do with Reggae or Rastafari. You know, it's called Jamaica coalition because it's a coalition between the Greens and the Liberals and Merkel. And the party colors resemble the flag of Jamaica, and that's why everybody calls it the Jamaica coalition. It's red, green, and yellow. And clearly, both options have pros and cons. I mean, many political observers, I would say, especially in the media in Berlin, would probably like a Jamaica coalition just because it's really new. It's never happened on the national level. But there's three reasons that make this seem unlikely, I would say. The first one is that it's probably only going to have a small majority in parliament, so it would make governing quite difficult. The second reason is that there's quite significant ideological differences between the Liberals and the Greens, especially on how to behave in Europe. It's a bit, you know, it's a bit like a duet of like Justin Bieber and the Rolling Stones, you know. From two different, completely different on the spectrum, and I don't know if they could really agree on a song to sing. So it's going to be difficult, and it's also, and that's the third reason, it's also not really what our European partners want. You know, the Liberal Party has argued for kicking Greece out of the Eurozone in the campaign, for example, and that obviously has raised alarm bells across Europe. So. In some, I think that a Jamaica coalition would spell trouble for Merkel, but the problem is that a grand coalition would spell trouble for the Social Democrats.
Yeah.
I mean, it would guarantee smooth sailing for Merkel, but the problem is that just at least half of the Social Democrats are absolutely against another grand coalition. And so our party leader has announced that there would be a party referendum, and all bets are off on the result.
Oh, another we're in the middle of referendums or quasi-referenda here. Parnell, what do you expect will happen after the election? Because I think you've speculated on the possibility of even the Alternative for Deutschland, even if it only has 10, 11% styling itself as the official opposition.
And I believe that that's what they are already positioning to do. That's the position that they have been hoping for a long time now. Really, they never expected to be in government. And the fact that they've been deliberately ruled out by all of the other parties as a coalition partner has sort of played into their hands. They want to be the opposition in this case. They also realise, and I had a chat to Alexander Gauland a while back and asked about this, they realise that they just don't have the ability at this stage to be in power. They realise they feel themselves as an opposition party. So they've been making a play to control the budgetary committee, which is in the traditional position of the opposition party, and of course would give them quite a high profile and a lot of power in any opposition. But also, I think that they are going to try and take on the position, the positioning of the voice of the unheard people. And that's what they want to be in this. They have actually got a lot more influence as the major opposition party than they would have if they were brought into some grand coalition in a fantasy world, which all of the parties have ruled out. So I think that we can expect over the next 4 years that we will hear a lot more from the AfD,
that they'll probably get their act together a lot more, and that possibly they will be successful in bringing this issue of immigration and integration to the table. Now, how that is then taken up in the media, which is very sensitive about talking about these issues, is another matter. And of course, that is where things could turn out quite interestingly in Germany. If the media refuses to talk about it, if the AfD continues to be sort of the voice of people who feel like they're not getting a voice anywhere else, then they could get even more powerful. If not, they'll probably end up at the end of 4 years sort of shrinking and dying, like all of the other minor parties in these kind of positions.
Great to have talked with you both. Michael Broning, Head of International Policy at the Social Democratic Friedrich Ebert Institute, and Parnell McGuinness, writer and strategist. She's the editor of the recently launched website The Fair Go, which celebrates classical liberalism. Thank you so much to both of you for being on Saturday Extra.
Well, thanks for having me.
Thanks very much.